You're just going to keep thinking about the chompers. She's going to have dreams of chompers chasing her. When the room goes to woman. It's a great song, though, I got to say.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Gen X Stories, a podcast about how the so-called lost generation found itself. We are your hosts, Eve, Courtney, Lori, and Chris. On today's episode, we are talking about movies, but not just movies, specifically movie soundtracks, ones that made the movies better or maybe even worse. Do you remember the movies or do you remember the songs from the movies? All right, on with the show. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hi, Eve.
I think Lori is the hardest one to impress in this group.
Because she's a music person.
No, yes. My only thing about me is I've got my 80s thing going on.
I think that's an interesting place to start, because 80s music, a lot of it was driven from the movies we watched, or at least for me. I got into movies from listening to the music that was in them, or they released it ahead of time. And so to me, they're almost synonymous. But we did ask about this in our Facebook group. There are some that are really divergent that I would never see the movie, but I'd listen to the music. How do you feel about music in a movie?
I mean, I think if they're well curated and they're not just overly anthemic, then I usually sort of like it. It sort of just segues. A really good example is Lost in Translation, which I think is a great soundtrack. Some great bands from the 80s. You have, now it's escaping me, Jesus and Mary Chain. It's just seamless. It sets the tone perfectly. Whoever did it, I think, did a great, great job. By comparison to sort of anthemic ones from the 80s, Top Gun and the Rocky.
Lori's going to get you. Oh, my God. Sorry. Look at your face. Oh.
They annoyed the hell out of me.
I'm curious. Why did those bug you?
They were just overplayed. And at a time when there were videos, I think that they were just so unbelievably annoying to me personally.
But see, I think that's a good point. Sometimes the videos actually overdid it. Let's just take Top Gun since you brought it up.
Because it's there.
If you had just heard it in the film and associated with that. But then we got all the videos like the Danger Zone, and they took the snippets out of the movie, and then it got overplayed. And that's the problem. It's the overplaying.
How else would you have heard the music if it wasn't overplayed and you didn't see the movie?
But you would have seen the movie.
Maybe.
Well, yeah, but it always just seemed like there was where the entire action just dropped and suddenly people are on the motorcycles, they're on the beach playing volleyball, they're high-fiving.
You don't love playing with the boys? I mean, that volleyball scene is iconic.
Eye candy for us, Courtney.
Is it the movie that you love, or is it the music about that scene?
Can I say neither?
It wasn't meant for you, Chris. The volleyball scene isn't for you.
But I'm saying, my point is, it stops the action. That always sort of drives me nuts, is when it's like, maybe not the first Rocky movie, but some of the other ones, where literally it's the montage scene where let's roll the song that we've written for the movie and we're going to be punching things and running on the beach. It became so ubiquitous and such a trope that it was just a great time to go and get popcorn at least.
Even as a kid, is it so when you were growing up and you first saw Top Gun, did you roll your eyes when they had the montage moment?
Yeah.
Going to see
Maverick.
Maverick.
No, I'll see it, sure. But I'm sure there's going to be that irritating scene in there.
At least one.
I mean, what do you think, Courtney? Am I just the only person standing on this rock, or are you going to come and join me with this one?
Well, I think what you're articulating is that when movies are making mini music videos as opposed to driving the narrative, like that's really, I think, what the complaint is. And then that song becomes its own music video as a result of the movie. I mean, I think sometimes movies do a great job of introducing us to bands that maybe we haven't heard about. Mm-hmm. You know, like I thought Berlin got a huge boost from Top Gun. I mean, I knew Riding on the Metro, but you know, not everyone else did. And it was great for them to have a hit song and then people could explore their music. And I think what you're also talking about in 16 Candles, she goes to a school dance and there's music played at the school dance, and that's part of the plot. And then sometimes a song becomes a character's identifier.
Like what?
Oh, I know you're going to ask that for me.
I know.
Give something like Time of My Life from Dirty Dancing. That movie ends like a movie musical. Let's be clear. The boy gets the girl and the girl becomes empowered and they do a big musical number to finish. Like it's a movie musical that's pretending to be a drama all the way through. And like Vision Quest, Crazy for You, like Madonna's singing it at a club. They go to a club, she's singing it. Like it's part of the plot. But things like Cruel Summer by Bananarama with the Karate Kid montage is going to annoy Chris. I'm curious. I do not know the answer to this question, but At what point did music producers or companies really have an alignment with films to promote? So they both became sort of a cross promotion of each other versus the person in charge of music for the movie just seeking out and selecting things that were great for the script. And I want to jump back to, I can't remember when it came out, but Blondie did the soundtrack for American Gigolo.
Oh, she did the whole thing? Was it the all Blondie?
It was the
whole
thing. Oh. And of course, Simon and Garfunkel did The Graduate. Those are very special types of films and special types of soundtracks. So I'm going to toss that out to you guys to see what you think about that kind of stuff.
Well, I think those are very good examples where they lift the idea and the whole story. Now, even those, and I'm used like the idea of the montage, and there were some of those moments in The Graduate, but I think that there was a subtlety in the cinematography and the performance that it wasn't just a big explosion of testosterone, which I guess is one of the thing that I'm just sort of...
That's what it comes down to. Yeah. It's all about danger zone, really, when it comes down to is danger zone.
Flying to an asteroid to go blow it up or something. It just seems... silly to me. And I appreciated sort of filmmakers who, like you said, like Mike Nichols and Jonathan Demme and Sofia Coppola and Cameron Crowe, who came from music, who really were able to sort of curate the kind of songs and get the songs to help move the story along.
You bring up an interesting point, and Courtney brought it up too, that there is a role now in creation of movie music and finding the right music to go with the right moments, which sounds like the absolute coolest fucking job ever. That if your whole job is to look at the raw cut and figure out what songs move the action along, that's awesome. But if it's just like, well, this person paid me, so we're going to put this song in there. I can hear that when that happens. I don't know if anyone else can, but maybe some of the movies of our youth did that.
Gratuitous placement.
But to your point, Chris, with the testosterone and back to Rocky, I'm a Philly girl. When they do Eye of the Tiger and he's getting ready, I'm all in. That music just sort of, that did it for me. I think you have some valid points in Top Gun, but there's something about some movies where the music makes sense.
Then there's songs that don't have lyrics. So I'm thinking specifically of the very famous song by Yellow called Oh Yeah.
Oh.
And it was used in The Secret of My Success brilliantly, where there's people crossing each other or lots of people getting ready and doing different things. It was also used in Ferris Bueller. But the song that I think was so great in Ferris Bueller was when he's running home. And as he's trying to run home, his dad's driving, his mom and his sister are in the car. I'm just looking it up now. It's called The Beat. Is the artist that did it, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Those are two songs that I thought were extremely effective that didn't have lyrics with them that I thought helped move the plot or enhance the plot.
But would you listen to those musics? Those musics. God, I feel so old.
Yellow. I got the album or the cassette tape.
But and you got it because of the movie, because you heard it in the movie.
Yep.
Did you like the rest of the songs on the album? Or were you? Oh, see, there you go. Yep. See, then it's done its job at that point.
Also, I don't think there was, other than the Bob Seger song in Risky Business, Tangerine Dream did this.
I love Tangerine Dream.
Yes. Very electronica, but it had this sort of tension to it, and it worked very well for the movie.
I wonder if we don't remember the songs as well as remember the moment, and if you really sort of take the moment apart, you're like, oh, there was that song, and that really made it.
Okay, but Courtney, I'm curious, when you got that
Yellow,
did you get the cassette of the soundtrack or of that artist?
Yes, of the artist.
Okay,
same thing. I got Berlin. Great way to introduce different bands and stuff.
John Hughes was very good about that kind of stuff. And I think there's certain writers who write with soundtracks going on so that they can sort of set the tone and set the feeling for what the scenes that they're trying to do. And going back to what Eva said, I mean, the music supervisors is what they're called.
That's the word. Thank you.
They've been around for a long time. I have seen a lot more in television, particularly since in the early 2000s with like The Sopranos, where songs really became punctuation. Just everything was just perfect. And Scorsese also.
Oh.
About some of those moments in his movies. First of all, he had
Layla.
Yeah,
Layla. Eric Clapton, when they walk into the restaurant in Casino.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Goodfellas.
Goodfellas. I had the Stones in one of them. I mean, they must have cost a fortune.
I was going to say the licensing is crazy. Yeah, nobody sing anything. You can hum, Courtney. You can't sing anything.
We can say names without paying.
We can say names. We just can't sing.
We cannot forget the ultimate music video movie, which was Flashdance.
I'm going to say Purple Rain.
Purple Rain.
No. Purple Rain is an album of itself. It stands alone.
True.
Prince is a god.
Yep. True. That
Flashdance, they got the song Maniac and they focus on her thighs for 20 minutes. I mean,
did
that bother you, Chris?
I'm not saying it didn't bother me, but
no, I'm asking.
Did you like the jumping thighs in Maniac?
Was it Michael Cimbora or something?
Yeah,
something like that. There was a lot of jumping and flipping and
a lot of water drops,
splashing. I think a lot of it has to do with sort of the premise of the movie too. Like, if the premise for me just doesn't click, it's a small time steel worker
in Pittsburgh. It's sure even in the lyrics.
Like a, you don't believe she could have become a dancer at a professional company?
No, but it becomes so outlandish. What was her name in the movie? Wasn't it really unusual? Or
I don't even remember the movie enough. I remember the song. I don't even remember the character's name.
Then that means the movie was...
The movie sucked. There's certain movies that linger in my brain because of a song. And you brought up Vision Quest. I think I may have seen that movie once. But the only thing I remember about that movie is the Madonna song. Because, again, I'm a Madonna person, but it just didn't matter. Because that song did everything for me.
Crazy for you.
Alex. There it is. Alex was her name in
Alex Owens.
Like, you don't even like the name, Chris.
No, that's his point. That was his point.
It's got to be quirky. Let's give the female character, Ingenue, a boy's name with but we're going to spell it ironically. It became such a trope.
At least you didn't put a heart over an I or anything. That would've...
And I've said trope, I think, 3 times now. So now I'm becoming my own trope.
You bring up a good point because there are those 2 sides of it. There's music as a trope and there's music that moves the narrative if we really want to be academic about it. But I think it's 100% correct. Are there ones that were just fun, that sort of lingered in your memory because you
Purple
went to
Rain.
Purple Rain, but that wasn't even fun. I mean, Purple Rain was like, that was a movie, man.
Yeah, but like to the point that we were speaking about, they're a band playing in a club, therefore the songs make sense.
Okay.
And there's only a couple times where the songs are used as underscores to events outside of the club.
But I think that the one, when they're on the motorcycle and they're riding,
Take Me With You.
It's more of a show.
Oh, Take Me With You.
It's a great song. And that's take like a montage that works. Stop.
Yeah. 3 bars.
Sponsored Jeez by Purple Louise. Rain. Right. In relation to that, Blues Brothers. Music kind of is music with the character, but also kind of music as funny because those characters came out of a funny world. There's a couple of people in the Facebook group who noted Blues Brothers, both regular and 2000, as one of their
Never
favorites.
Saw it.
Never saw it. Tonight, you must. Oh my God. What's
Belushi.
Even if you don't love Belushi, what's the line? It's like, we've got something in our pocket.
I have a tank of gas, a bag of cigarettes, a seat, 500 miles to Chicago. It's dark and we're wearing sunglasses. Let's hit it. Something
yeah,
like.
Let's hit it. It's a
I'm
great
from Chicago,
line.
Chicago. So you got to.
And Chicago.
The police car was named as where I grew up. It was a Mount Prospect police car. He got it into action. No, it's great because, first of all, came out of Saturday Night Live, and it came out of mostly Belushi's really found love of the blues, particularly Chicago blues. But then you look at the people who were in it. You have Aretha Franklin. You have Ray Charles, John Lee Hooker, Cab Calloway's in it.
Oh my God.
Amazing things. And the backing band is just these incredible session musicians, Duck Dunn and McIntyre Murphy. Actually, one of the guys I worked with at the Late Show, Bones Malone, was in it as well. He plays the trombone. He was actually around long enough to be in The Last Waltz, the band that Martin Scorsese did, I think in 74 or something. I didn't even know he was in The Last Waltz until I rewatched. I'm like, holy shit, that's Bones.
I love that he is a trombone player named Bones. It's probably similar to what you're talking about, Courtney, is that it's about music and it is about them and the blues and the songs. But there's something about it that feels a little
and
different.
And Belushi is a blues singer. I mean, the film is labeled a movie musical. And John Belushi's character is a blues singer.
You bring up a point twice now about the notion of a movie musical and a movie. And the soundtracks of a movie and a soundtrack of a movie musical are actually sort of different because, like, let's say movie musical is Grease. It was adapted based on the songs that were in that play.
They're really, really, really naughty.
In retrospect, you look back, you go, whoa.
And I had no idea.
Did you sing? What's the one that Rizzo
Summer
sings?
Summer 11?
No,
there
Rizzo.
There are worse things that,
there you
I
go.
Could do.
That's right.
We all sang it.
But we didn't know what it was about.
Oh.
Were there other movie musicals when we grew up other than Grease that combined movie magic with the music?
I think other than like the Muppets. Like, you know, Xanadu, which is horrible.
Oh, Xanadu. God. We God have to talk me. About Xanadu. We
no,
have to
I refuse. We'll leave the meeting.
Okay. But I have to go watch the Blues Brothers.
Xanadu is terrible. Is I will tell you that, Courtney, it is terrible. But there's something about it that is so terrible that when you watch it, there's a time and a place. And everything was done by ELO. So the music was sort of wild. But Courtney, she's like one step out the fucking door for Xanadu.
It was not good.
Movie musicals, I think, oddly, feel like they've come back around.
Don't forget Grease 2.
Michelle Pfeiffer and Adrian Zimetta.
Cool.
I see. I can't. I think.
Oh, no, I want a cool rider.
Coretta. Humma, 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 humma. I can't do Grease 2.
If he's hot enough, he can burn you through and through.
Oh my God. Why do you know this?
Because I watched the movie like 50 times.
Okay.
Because it was the only thing that was on the television.
We've talked about a couple shows that movie songs stuck with you for some reason. What were ones that destroyed the movie for you?
I'm trying to think of like just something that would just sort of stick out and just go, oh my God. It just seems so obvious that this is just dropped in for whatever reason. There was this horrible movie called Mac and Me, and it was sort of a send up of E.T.
What?
Yeah. And but it's
I do
really,
remember this.
It's a horrible movie. But in the middle of it, there's this commercial where they sing and dance in a McDonald's and Ronald McDonald is there. And it's such an obvious, horrible product placement.
Yeah.
That it just, I mean, first of all, the movie is laughably horrible. And then you have this. It's almost like where you can't even imagine that somebody's, well, this will be good. Put this in the movie. Our protagonist, he's going to go and just have a sing and dance thing in a McDonald's.
And it'll be okay.
Yeah. Oh, no, nobody will notice that. It was terrible.
Oh, Mac and Me. Holy shit. 1988. That looks terrible. You brought up Dirty Dancing. I think that there's The Time of My Life, but there was other songs that, even though there's some part of Dirty Dancing that's totally unrealistic.
Some.
Okay. All.
What?
Nate's. Oh, Lori's going to fight you on that one. Why? Wait, nobody puts baby in a corner. And then the music starts.
It's all so perfect.
It's awesome. Oh,
okay. And it all ends so beautifully. Now, one of the greatest soundtracks of all time, The Big Chill.
All right.
Yes.
Glad you brought this up because this goes hand in hand with Dirty Dancing. And it was very interesting. Listen, the music in there is really good in both movies. Not all of it. Some of it's crap. But I'm trying to think of the best way. It's like people in college reappropriating a time that they never lived in, and becoming nostalgic about something that they had no connection to. And it became the one cassette that everybody had
cassette.
In the dorm room. And you're like, after about like the 40th time, you're like, just please, we know it's good music,
but it was
turn
good
it the
music.
Fuck off. Just please, let's move on.
That might be a good example of a movie that was fine. The music was better. And then when you look back and you think about it academically, the connection just isn't there. Then you move forward to a couple of movies that use soundtracks like Gross Point Blank, which is all about the 80s and it's all about a reunion. And so the music punctuates absolutely every single thing, including the dance, but it is totally perfect. I just recently saw it and I'm like, oh, I love that one. Oh, I love that one. Oh, that was great. Violent Femmes and all that stuff. That makes sense from a nostalgic perspective where maybe Big Chill did not.
But just because it wasn't their era doesn't mean there's a lot of music I like that I grew up with because my parents liked it.
There's a connection. Yeah.
It also gave us another horrible thing. The music break in the kitchen. I think that was one of
yes.
the first times
yes.
you saw it.
They put on music and suddenly everybody's
dancing
and cooking at the same time. There's a famous one with Susan Sarandon and Julia Roberts in the movie where she's dying of cancer, stepmom, and they all sing and dance on the beds and they're using the hairbrushes to a song. Like that became
a thing.
In addition to like the makeover montage and the physical transformation, there was a sing-along moment in a lot of movies and those things drove me nuts. My best friend's wedding, they do it at the crab lobster thing where the moment I wake up and everyone sings along. I'm like, no one knows the words. No one can follow the tune. Come on.
If I'm at a reception or in an office party and somebody starts tinkling on the ivories and having to say, I'm gone. I'm at the coat check and down to the car as quick as I can.
Because you've never broken out into song in your kitchen with your friends.
Yes, but I have a horrible voice. I can't
it doesn't matter, but it happened.
But let's do the chicken and the egg thing. Did this ever happen before, or did it happen because people, has this influenced our behavior, or did this spontaneously happen? And then I never think that they know how to end it. Like they're just singing, and then like there's a cut to another scene. I'm like, what the fuck just happened? Here's what I want to see. I want to see the awkwardness when they finish the song, and then they don't know what to do. Or they
thank you. Yes, I totally agree.
Well, that's what happens. You're like,
the waiter comes over. How drunk are you, Lori? How drunk are you, Lori, in the moments where you're singing in the kitchen? I'm just curious because I don't believe you.
I have videos.
Oh, dear.
You must save the.
Here's what happens. I had my cousin over like the day after Thanksgiving, and we'd be sitting around and we would play games or whatever. And then the music would come on. And the next thing you know, we're all dancing in the house. Why is that not normal?
Wait, are you in your underwear having a pillow fight? Because that would really bring home the movie moment.
No, but we're dancing and having fun and being silly. You guys have never done this, really?
Well, of course, but I'm going to say
he has.
It's not cinematic, though. That's the thing.
But first of all, my kitchen is a galley style kitchen. It's not laid out for great dancing and great.
We're probably good with acoustics.
Just up and back, no, up and back, up and back.
Kitchen. It was more like in the living room.
If somebody's jumping on the counter, I'm going to tell them to get the F off the counter, for Christ's sake. We're making food. There's salmon there.
I wasn't cooking.
Okay. And when they, like, when it happens in like restaurants, I would be irritated.
It's like Courtney's like, however drunk Lori is, let's just double it.
I just paid 70, now. $70 for a T-bone. Get off your table and shut up.
See, I knew that he wouldn't appreciate the movie magic of it.
When we are all together, I swear to God, I'm going to make everybody dance in the living room.
That's not going to happen.
Oh, it's going to be a solo performance, Lori, and we're going to enjoy it immensely.
But no, but you bring up a good point. So there's realism to suddenly breaking up to song and dancing, and there's not. I'm going to give you a moment that
there's
I'm sorry.
There's never realism to suddenly breaking up to song and dance.
I disagree. Here, I'm going to give you one, and you're going to tell me.
Unless you're Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland, there is no.
Or it's sophomore year, a drama club.
No, I got one for you. You're going to argue with me, but
I'm not.
Unless you're in the middle of rehearsing a show. Come on, people.
Reality Bites, My Sharona in the Mini Mart. Who hasn't done that in the Mini Mart? I did that.
Haven't.
I
don't remember.
Wait a minute. What? Lori? The song comes on and who's checking them out, looks at them like, what the fuck's wrong with you? It's a moment in Reality Bites. Chris is like, I don't know.
Yeah, Reality Bites is the title of the film. It's not really reality.
That's the best moment. And then also when they're singing Squeeze in the car. Come on.
Yeah.
I suppose you didn't ever sing with your friends with your heads doing this in your car to any song.
I did. I was a terrible singer, but I did it. Especially. Wait,
you're saying you had a Wayne's World moment with Bohemian Rhapsody? Nobody knows the lyrics for real. I mean, come on. This is what the difference is.
The reason that happened is because we saw it in a movie.
No, that is not true. That movie came way after I was a teenager.
But the fact that in public with your friends, a song comes on the elevator, Muzak or whatever that you like. If it happened to be My Sharona, there's no way we would not do it after that movie. There was just no way.
You're telling me that there are attendants at gas stations up and down the East Coast, Eve, that are traumatized by you coming into their snack bar and dancing to the song.
It's quite possible. I cannot deny that.
They have
that
a little picture
happened.
Of Eve going, have you seen this lady?
Because she's the Sharona bandit.
she wanders around breaking
out. They call security.
She stands alone, man. I don't know. I did it because of the movie. I love that part of the movie. And that was a rite of passage. Y'all don't get it.
Love it. I love it.
I'm so looking for when we broke out into dancing.
Okay. And when you find that, we're going to have to watch that video. You're going to look at it first to make sure you're cool with it. And then we're going to share the movie montage.
You'll have to get some cleared music.
I can't afford that.
One of my favorite songs was found in a movie.
Which one?
And I'm not the only one who loves a song, but I loved OMD, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, and the song If You Leave, which ends
Pretty in Pink, right?
Yeah. It's Pretty in Pink.
It's the prom. They play it at the prom. It's when she chooses the wrong guy. She chooses Blaine instead of Ducky.
I love that song.
But that whole soundtrack, I don't know if Chris feels this way about it, because that whole soundtrack had a sort of an alt to it.
It was more new wave.
It was great.
Did you like that soundtrack for Pretty in Pink, or because it was a chick flick, you just didn't bother, Chris?
No, I always like the psychedelic furs, and the original version of the song, though, is a lot more grungy. It's a lot more fuzzy.
The Pretty in Pink was a little edgier than the one that
they
put.
It's more edgy, yep.
I sometimes did hear the original song outside of the movie soundtrack, and I'd be like, wait, something's wrong here, because I was indoctrinated to how it was in the soundtrack, and then you hear the real music and go, wait a minute, someone did a fast one on me there. Even Simple Minds, Don't You Forget About Me, that wasn't supposed to be...
They didn't
their song,
it.
Right? Who wrote that song?
They didn't.
Somewhere I read that was supposed to be a Billy Idol song, which would have changed it entirely. Breakfast Club is a great soundtrack, but that one became the thing. And I don't remember anything else from Simple Minds other than that song. There was also Everyone Wants to Rule the World. Was that in a movie? It was
Tears
later.
Fears.
Tears was,
it
a, was. In an 80s movie. It was in Real Genius. That had a good soundtrack.
I just remember one of the singers, and I hope I'm not sounding unkind, but he had a big set of chompers on him. And when he sang, it looked like he was just chomping at the air.
Who is it?
It's two guys. But when he sang, he opened his mouth really, really, really loudly. There was the tiny ponytail on one of the guys, too.
Oh.
I'm not judging.
Which was the trend at the time.
We've lost it. Tiny ponytail did her in. Oh my God.
I don't know. Was the mess about the chompers or.
but you didn't know about the. the chompers because it was used in the movie. And then you saw the song, you saw the video, and you're like, holy fuck, the chompers. Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm sorry, I've destroyed this entire podcast.
Oh, Chris, I was crying. Sorry. It's the big chompers that got me.
We're going to have the giggles. We're going to move on to another topic away from chompers. So movie musicals have come back as movies, interestingly. So La La Land.
Never saw it.
Oh, don't you ever see anything?
I see a lot.
Lori, are you in a cave? Like, what's going on?
I don't like, we've talked about this. I don't like musicals.
But
so you haven't seen Chicago?
No, I've seen Chicago.
But that's a musical.
And that's a musical.
And I got like through, I didn't get all the way through it. The only one that I've gotten through.
What, Cinderella when you were five?
Maybe. Bippity boppity boo.
Hamilton.
But Hamilton is its own thing. La La Land is a little different.
Hamilton is a musical that has been filmed. It is not a movie musical.
Not a movie.
Well, that's probably why I liked it. And I like them singing the words to...
You don't like them breaking into song. Kind
it's from the woman who sings with her friends and breaks out into song in the middle of a party. Just pointing that out. Just pointing out the irony.
Yeah, musicals are not like real life at all.
Not at all. Not for Lori.
No. Nope. She just lives it. She lives it. She doesn't want to watch it.
This crap.
This doesn't feel authentic.
No.
We're celebrating Lori. We're honoring her choice.
We are the worst. We are the worst. All right, I'll bring up one more movie musical. Greatest Showman.
See that?
Oh my Play. God.
That's, you saw that one out of all of them. You saw Greatest Showman.
Have you seen Singing in the Rain? Nope.
I have.
Did you know it was a musical or did you just go for Hugh Jackman?
Oh, you didn't. Oh,
I did not know.
She showed up. I knew it. I knew it.
My God.
She saw Hugh Jackman on that poster and she's like, that Aussie's for me.
But there's, I'm trying to look for the song. What's the damn song? This is me. I actually, in researching this, I went and looked at Oscar winning songs or Oscar nominated songs to see which ones actually sort of made it into our consciousness. And I'd forgotten about that one because not only did Kayla Settle is the artist who did it in the movie, Kesha covered it. That became sort of a song that got into the charts, which reminded me a little bit of when we were younger. That not only got me as a dramatic moment, to your point, Courtney, that it fit the narrative, but also as a standalone, that one sort of work. So we're going to go jump back one more. I'll give you two sides of Peter Gabriel.
Let's take a moment of a silence for Peter Gabriel because he's a god.
So back in our day, Say Anything with In Your Eyes. That moment is iconic. And it's iconic for what the character is not only doing, it makes the movie. And it's a fabulous song that lingered past it.
Yes, because he is using the song to win back his girl.
And the boombox. Chris isn't sure.
No, and the song was part of the album. It was part of So before it was used in the movie. It was not like it was designed for that. It just fit that type of movie used songs like that all the way through. And I think effectively, I sort of made a list of soundtracks that I thought were really great. Anybody can agree or disagree with me. Well, you got The Graduate. You got Singles, which is a great
Yes. Singles.
Purple Rain. Superfly, yep. Way back in the 70s. Trainspotting, I thought was really
good. Yes, cool. That was on the list. Somebody in our Facebook group actually said,
Oh, Brother, Wherefore Art Thou was really good. I thought Marie Antoinette, Sofia Coppola, Lost in Translation was also a great.
Both relatively recent.
Something Wild, great soundtrack to it.
That was Demi. You mentioned Demi before.
Yeah, Don't forget Footloose.
I was just going to say, I have a feeling Chris didn't go for.
Chris is not going to like that.
He's not going to like that. He didn't go for the pop culture, Footloose, Top Gun.
It had that scene.
Because it had a dance scene.
But the songs were related to them dancing because they couldn't dance in town. So like they actually had a purpose. And then he's teaching him to dance. Like the songs were used to know.
It's the song when they're dancing and they have the Walkman on and it's like, what's the Denise, what's her
Heard
name?
Heard It for the Girl.
Heard It for the Girl.
Let's hear it for the boy.
Hear for the boy.
Let's hear for the boy.
Wasn't there a moment right at the end where he like jumps up, it's a cut and he's got his spiky hair and there's stuff.
It's at the prom.
Let's dance.
Glitter comes on behind.
Yes. It's the prom. It's the prom.
There was no glitter being thrown.
These are people who did not get to dance in their town. They fought hard for this prom. It still had to be outside of town. God. So there is glitter, goddammit.
Courtney's gonna
You cannot
defend.
Rain on that glitter, buddy. They worked it.
Courtney will agree that it's part of the action. Chris says, that's not fucking realistic.
Where did they get all the decorations? Come on. There's no Amazon they're getting. Where are they going?
You are denying the creativity of an 18-year-old.
No, I also remember how shitty the decorations were at my prom.
Speak to your own prom. You were at Footloose prom.
We talked about soundtracks, but we have to talk about those songs that were attached to the movie that just made you want to die after you heard them for like the 400th time. The Titanic song.
Yes.
Please, for the love love of God. I don't want to ever hear that song.
Oh, God. My heart should go on. Don't sing it, Courtney. Courtney's
gonna... No. Never again. But on the flip side, if you think about Philadelphia, which had two really great ones, The Streets of Philadelphia won the Oscar, and then also Neil Young did a song that was hauntingly beautiful, equally as good.
When we're talking about sort of going along with the story, that soundtrack, and especially those two songs, matched the emotion, sort of came close to it, but it really matched what was going on in that movie.
So the one thing we haven't talked about, but I do think the music is important. There's always an opening song to James Bond.
I was going to bring it up. Thank you.
And it's a vehicle for maybe emerging artists or an oldie but goodie. I mean, Shirley Bassey doing Goldfinger. God, that's the gold standard. Yes. Nothing could top it. But I'm excited that Billie Eilish and her brother did the song for the upcoming Bond film. I heard them on a podcast and they were talking about how when you work with the producers, Broccoli, thank you, that there's a way that they work with the artists to develop the song so they keep the style of James Bond, but they still have some creative freedom. And I just was fascinated by it. And I just think those songs are really interesting. I'd to have a movie soundtrack of just all the Bond songs.
And there's a recent one, Adele did Skyfall.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. Oh, that was so good.
I love the fact that they have rules and they walk you through what it takes to be a Bond song in the very beginning. I love that.
I like Billie Eilish. I think she's very talented, but are they going to give her some oxygen or something so that she's not as breathy on this? Because she sings very quietly.
Singing voice is perfectly average.
No, but I mean, she sounds like everybody else. Her singing voice is very breathy. And you think of like Shirley Bassey. You
know, Goldfinger.
It's amazing. It's like just a different.
Sing it, baby. Sing it.
Yeah, exactly. but think about Live and Let Die. Paul McCartney.
Yes. Oh, yes. I brought up Peter Gabriel. He did a new song for the movie Snowden, and it's called The Veil. It's an Oliver North film, so it's already going to be over the top. But at the end, he sings this song and it has that trademark Peter sound to it. They don't stop the movie, actually, which is sort of interesting to me, is they play it and they show what happens next and what happens next. I thought that was a good use of a song that way. But it was vintage Peter. What they've been doing recently, too, is I've noticed a lot of covers in new movies of old songs. Like Hunger Games did Everyone Wanna Rule the World. And I forget that it's a woman artist, but they covered it in the tone of that movie. So it's dark and it's edgy and it's kind of like, whoa, I'd love to hear them do My Heart Will Go On, like a Hunger Games 5, and see what the fuck that sounds like.
No, we don't need to ever hear that song ever.
Never, ever.
Ever.
There's a couple movies recently that I cannot stand, but there's some good music on it. And you're all going to roll your eyes at me. All of the 50 Shades of Grey movies, which are terrible, have some decent music on it.
I only got through half of the first one.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible.
But I have to confess, I read the book.
I'm going to go get a slice of pizza.
There's some good music on there.
The Guardians of the Galaxy movies.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
The songs are part of the story and part of the main character relates back to his past mother. I'm not giving away anything. You haven't seen the movie, but his mother gives him a cassette tape and it's part of his identity and his connection back to her, but it's also part of the soundtrack. And the songs are really good. It's a popcorn movie. You're not seeing Deer Hunter.
If you hear Blister in the Sun and Deer Hunter, there's something wrong. I don't know if any of you guys are also Star Trek fans.
Oh, yeah. Sabotage.
So in the movie for Star Trek Beyond, they're going in against the guys and they blast Sabotage out into the universe and it saves the world. When that came on, I was on my feet going, yes!
Anytime I'm watching something, even if it's a movie on TV, I love that app Shazam. I have all kinds of like single songs on my list. I'm like, oh, that was good. What was that? I like that.
I think that we are tough because we had such great examples in our youth. The bar is higher. The list of the things that we came up with and the list of things that our Facebook group brought up, I don't find they're equal these days.
Well, I think that people also don't consume music the way that they used to. Everything's Spotify, so you're not listening to albums. And I think there's always a point of nostalgia that people have in soundtracks. You see it like in the Stranger Things where they use a lot of stuff from the 80s.
I think that aimed at us at recapturing what we loved when we were growing up, which sort of to me, he says that there's not as much good new stuff as there is old stuff to copy.
I think there's always good stuff out there. It's not being served to us. So you have to go out and find it.
And that brings up sort of the point that movies in a lot of ways have been the gateway drug to getting into some of those songs and getting into some of those artists. I think it was true for us with a lot of the stuff we've talked about today. And I'm hoping it's true moving forward. I hope that when you listen to a movie, that suddenly Lori puts up her phone and says, what the hell is that? We're starting to lose court. So we'll do a wrap up.
We're losing us all, babe.
Yeah. I just wanted to thank all of the soundtrack lovers for sharing their thoughts on our Facebook group. These include Spam, Rita, Kath, Keith, Sean, Carrie, Christine, Katie, Rob, Danny, John, Melinda, Jennifer, Dottie, Alan, Raquel, Andy, Robin, Colleen, Nikita, Camber, Juliana, Heather, Maria, Amy, Carla, Kimberly, Carolyn, Dot, Trish, James, and Amy. That's a lot! And a few of their favorite soundtracks we didn't get a chance to mention include The Lost Boys, Until the End of the World, Valley Girl, Flash Gordon, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Singles, Repro Man, Empire Records, The Crow, Less Than Zero, Weird Science, Cruel Intentions, Commitments, and Reservoir Dogs. Keep them coming, guys. Y'all rock. That's it for us this week. Thanks for listening to Gen X Stories. Drop us a note at hello@GenXStories and we may do some shout outs on a future episode. You can also subscribe to Gen X Stories on your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Instagram @GenXStories or join our ever-growing Facebook group. We all have a Gen X story. What's yours?